right, greetings. Welcome in. Better's Last Stand, show number 95, coming to you from the Pine Room Studios downtown Wheeling on another hot, hot day. Although it's not as bad as yesterday. It's pretty warm. You know, the storms were supposed to get to cool things down have not come to fruition. I know that's stunning. As Job says every day on the radio, when he reads the weather, I mean, it's like, why am I even doing this? Because it's probably going to be wrong. Everything they tell you is just a guess. So anyway, stay cool. Stay safe out there as we dive into some more sports here. The Olympics about to end this week, and we'll catch ourselves up with some of the things we got going on there. But don't be alarmed. It's football season, whether you like it or not. Thursday, full card of professional football preseason games begin. So you got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday action all weekend. So the NFL is here. High school football a couple weeks away. College football about 3 weeks away. So, it's time. It's time to go. Whether you like it or not, it's coming. So you just make the best of it like I'm going to try to do. Anyway, thanks for joining us here. Show number 95, Better's Last Stand. We were up about a little over four and a half units last week, not counting the golf, up plus 470 overall. We had the silver and the bronze medalists in the golf. So we were beating around the bush there, but Scottie Scheffler out of nowhere. Shoots 62 on Sunday, wins the gold medal at the Olympics in France, and it was impressive fashion. You can't take anything away from him. So he's locked up player of the year on the PGA Tour. Looked like Shoffley, maybe, if he outperformed him at the Olympics. Could have stolen that from him, but that's not happening. So Scheffler locks it down. Matsuyama and Fleetwood play well in the silver and bronze medal spots. Both of them had good chances to win, but Scheffler was just on fire on the back nine, and there's nothing you can do about it. We had four top 20s of our guys. There was no cut, so that did not matter. So small profit if you had those guys the medal. I mean, those were decent prices, so hopefully you had that and you came out a little bit ahead there. AFL-wise, 7-5 on the week. CFL, 2-3. Another slacking week in the CFL. Can't get a handle on this. I don't even know who's good. I like to watch the games, and I'm trying to see who's who and what's what, and I really can't identify who the best team is in that league. So we'll try to continue to plug away at that as the season goes on. AFL futures, we did cash. We've gotten to the point where we can cash a few of those tickets, so that is good. We are 3-1 on our AFL season-long futures so far. So that's a good start. We got a couple other ones, some really important pending games coming up that I'll talk about when we go through the AFL card in the second part of the program. Olympic outrights, we cashed three winners so far. Lithuania to medal and reach the semis. We got those coming in at good plus prices. We had the French women to win their group in basketball at a good plus price. Still have live tickets on beach volleyball with Huber and Brunner, the Swiss duo who beat the United States last night 2-0. So they are now on to the semifinals. It looks like they'll at least have a shot at a medal at plus 275. So we're going to be live for that one. We got Sweden in handball at plus 340. That match going on probably about done right about now. It was a tight, tight match. I'm not sure they pulled it out, but we hope. Croatia in water polo plus 165. They also played today, and I believe they won, but I could be wrong about that. I checked it earlier, and they look like they're in good control of the game. We also have the German field hockey team to reach the semifinals. That I believe they play tomorrow. So got a lot of irons in the fire here. Olympics winding down. We got some beach volleyball going on right now. The Olympic women's basketball team are mostly women, and Brittany Griner are playing right now against Nigeria. And you got some wrestling going on, some taekwondo, some boxing. So still a few more days left of the enjoyment of the summer games in Paris. Moving on to baseball. We gave out some baseball futures that we liked post-trade deadline. They're up on BLS_PRP, so check those out. Most notably, the Padres, the Mariners, those were two teams I was high on. I still think the Giants and the Red Sox provide you a little bit of value to making the playoffs. So I think those teams worth taking a look. But the big news of the day, and we'll talk about this more with Sam in the third part of the program, is that the Pirates right now are – I don't want to use the term they're faltering or anything like that, because it's a little too premature to say that. But they are showing a small sign of concern. So they've lost, I believe, 4 out of 5 right now. And things, again, I'm not trying to sound the panic alarms here, but it's a little bit of an an issue right now if they don't get it corrected. Just recapping wild card situations. Boston Red Sox right now, just a half game out of the wild card. So they are right on the tail of the Kansas City Royals. The Orioles, who have not been playing very well, and they continue to not play well, and I'm very concerned about them too. They had another pitcher get hurt last night, but Brandon Hyde is not pushing the right buttons with the lineup. He's changing it way too drastically every night, and I think they were the best early in the year when they had a stability. They had the same at least six or seven other guys, whether you're rotating your catcher out or whatever, and Rutschman goes to catch the DH or whatever. But when you have that consistency, it seems like these guys perform a lot better. And he's changing it up way too drastically. It reminds me of Derek Shelton. They must have went to the same manager's camp back in, like, fifth grade, because that's about the quality of the managing out of both of those guys right now. So American League-wise, like I said, Red Sox a half game out. They're playing well right now. They're a pretty hot team. They've won six out of their last ten, and I don't think they're going to go anywhere. I think they're built to be able to have a shot here. So Phillies and Dodgers, both their leads are actually ironically playing each other, but their leads are not as safe as they once were, although Atlanta doing no favors for themselves here, losing two out of three of the Marlins. They blew a game last, well, actually didn't blow it. They just got destroyed by the Brewers. So they're a problem right now. The Mets are slumping, which I predicted. They stink. They will not be a factor here. The Cardinals, just okay. So here come the Giants, you know, down to four games. And, you know, the Giants, they're a team that's going to continue to be consistent. If Blake Snell keeps it up here, he pitches tonight. If he keeps this up, what he's been doing his last couple outings, then he almost have an automatic win when he's out there. And that's going to matter because the Cardinals are iffy. The Pirates are iffy. The Mets are iffy. And the Braves, I think, will probably be able to figure it out, but they might not. They might just have lost too much, and their pitching just can't hold up. So don't count out those Giants, the Red Sox as well. So we gave those good plus prices. Both of those teams now, the price has dropped since last week. The Mariners had played pretty well until last night. They got beat. Still doing all right. And then the Padres, staying red hot, went over the Pirates last night. And will they continue that on? But so baseball is starting to get down to where it's going to get exciting, and you're going to start to see these fraudulent teams exposed as time goes on. Speaking of fraudulent teams, actually, this team's not a fraud. They're just playing terrible. So White Sox snap a 21-game losing streak last night, taking out the A's. So if you kept rolling that over like we talked about last week, you were up like $200,000. Hopefully you didn't keep going with that, and you pulled back when they got the 20 and laid off there. But things are separating baseball right now. You're starting to see who the teams in 162 games are going to actually show to be good. And that's like, you know, San Diego, and these teams are starting to tick back up, Seattle, whereas teams like the Mets, who are garbage, will continue to go downward. The Yankees, who I'm still not sold on, they have a very easy schedule coming up, so they probably will. And they may end up separating themselves in the AL East. I don't think they will, because Baltimore head-to-head with them would be significant favorite in my mind. If you watch the games, you would know that. But you can take my word for that. If they play each other in a series, the Orioles are the better teams, no doubt about that. But the Yankees are playing a pretty bad schedule right now, and the Yankees are able to beat the bad teams. They don't beat the good teams, but they beat the bad teams. The Orioles struggle to beat the bad teams and can usually beat the good teams or tread water against the good teams. So what are you going to do? It's baseball. We got 162 games for a reason. We'll sort it out here week by week on Bettor's Last Stand. Moving on to the golf. As we said last week, Scottie Scheffler secures the gold medal in incredible fashion. Shoots a 62, just birdie after birdie on the back nine. I think he maybe birdied four or five straight holes, at least 14 through 17. He might have birdied 18 too, but anyway, he was exceptional. We're on to the Wyndham Championship. Not a very good tournament. Bad, bad field. No big names. The biggest name, I think, Sung J.M., who's not been great the last year and a half. But they go to Greensboro. This is Sedgefield Country Club. Not a difficult course. A place that guys could, you know, who are in decent form could put, you know, put up a pretty good score. So I expect it to be the only thing I will say is this is out in North Carolina, or down in North Carolina. You're going to get some of this remnants of the Hurricane Debbie. So maybe you get a lot of rain. Maybe this changes things. Maybe it makes the course easier. Maybe it wets the greens down to where these guys can just shoot darts at the pins. We shall see. A couple guys I was interested in, Cam Davis at 46-1. I think he is a guy that could do some damage at this course. JT Poston, who's had some success here at Sedgefield. We're going to go with him. And this is a long shot. Chesson Hadley. This guy's put up good numbers here. His game's been up and down. He's not really gotten back to where he was a few years ago. But I saw a few signs of life with him, and we're going to take a shot that maybe this course can produce some good results for Chesson Hadley. Those were the top three guys that I liked, and then I want to mix in a couple other guys since this is such a bad tournament. Eric Cole, you can find him around 65 to 170 to 1 range. Brian Harman, solid player. Brian Harman's actually a very good play at 29 to 1. He's very, very consistent, and you know with Brian Harman, you're going to get a good performance. This is not a course that you need to be able to smash the ball. So if you play good irons and putt well, which Brian Harman will do, you're going to be in contention. So I actually think him at around 30 to 1 is a very, very good price. So we'll be in on Harman. Siwoo Kim, another consistent player. He's around 23 to 1 this week. Doesn't have to hit it very far here. He can just get himself in good spots for his second shots. All his approach shots will be right on, and if he putts a little bit, he'll have a shot at 23 to 1. That's Siwoo. Cameron Young, another guy. Beating around the bush to win his first tournament here. He's a good player. He came close earlier this year, faltered late, but he could win this week. 26 to 1. I'll definitely take a shot with him. And then Keith Mitchell, who is a pretty good putter, doesn't smash it, and this is a perfect kind of course for him. You know, he kind of reminds me of like a Webb Simpson type player. So Webb Simpson's done very well at this tournament in the past, although his form is not good now. But Keith Mitchell's form is pretty good. So I think Keith Mitchell does a good job getting himself in position to make birdie quite often here this weekend. And at 51 to 1 or 55 to 1, depending on where you're finding him, I think Keith Mitchell makes a lot of sense. So recapping, we'll go with Cameron Davis at 46 to 1. JT Poston at 56 to 1, Chesson Hadley at 180 to 1, Siwoo Kim at 23 to 1, Keith Mitchell at 51 to 1, Cameron Young at 26 to 1, Eric Cole at 67 to 1, and Brian Harman at 30 to 1. Those are our plays for the Wyndham Championship. Olympic golf for the ladies is underway now. We posted these last week, so hopefully you saw them, BLS_PRP on X or Twitter. And we had Lydia Ko from New Zealand at 40 to 1. We had Celine Boutier, 22 to 1 from France. We had Charlie Hall, the English girl, 22 to 1. And then we had Rose Zhang, 22 to 1 from the United States. Those were the girls that we went with. So far, I think Celine Boutier was doing very well. So hopefully she keeps up there and has a good weekend. And we can cash that ticket because we could use it. We've not been our hottest the last few weeks, but that's okay. We're like I said earlier, we did pretty well in the Olympics so far. Got a few outrights that we posted. We're sweating out some games here today, so we'll have a little bit more clarity on what we need to do next week, or how we're going to grade out and how our plus minus is going to go over the next week. We hope anyway that it's in the plus side of things. Bad beats, I'll go ahead and do these in the first segment. Pirates bullpen and Shelty. Sunday's debacle with Skeens on the hill. They get four runs for him. Holderman comes in and blows the game. If you have the Pirates right now, and you're playing games when Paul Skeens is pitching, and you're going to make plays on these games, you might want to be betting the first five innings because Pirate bullpen's a little shaky. Shelty looks shaky. He doesn't know what he wants to do right now. From one week to the next, his strategy completely changes. He's going to bunt one week he's not, and it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I would be very skeptical of Shelty in the late innings, and I'd be skeptical of them blowing games when Skeens has got you a nice lead. So watch out for that. Another bad beat. This isn't an on-the-field, but this is an off-the-field. DraftKings, I don't know what the hell they're doing here, but in the states where their taxes are very high, and I sympathize. But you as an operator agreed to these rules in these states, Pennsylvania, New York, etc. DK announces a betting tax that will go into effect in 2025, the beginning of 2025. It's going to be basically a surcharge, and it will begin the gambling tax surcharge in states with high tax rates. Multiple operators beginning in 2025. So PA, New York, the list goes on. We're not in that, thank goodness, because we're only at a 10%. So that's good. But these ones are up into the 30s. So every dollar they make, they're giving 30 to the government of that state. It's kind of makes you nauseated. Voting around, people polling, things like that. It's not election polls. Don't worry. that we'll have fun with that later. 80% of the people so far polled say they will pull their business from DraftKings. And that's pretty significant, because you're going to find this is going to bleed over into their states where they don't have it, because people are going to be fearful that they're going to have it eventually. So what they were going to do is they're going to take your winnings. If I hit for $1,000, they're taking a percentage of that off of the top and then covering their obvious percentages and everything that they win off of me. So it's flat out criminal. They should be. We pay the taxes. I work in the industry. You pay the taxes with what you win from the customers. That's how it works. You shouldn't be getting taxed for winning. That's just ridiculous. It's unacceptable practice. I'm stunned that DraftKings wants to do that. Johnny Avello, who's a legendary bookmaker, I cannot imagine that he was for this. I maybe they didn't have a choice. Maybe they're hemorrhaging money so bad they just sold VSiN. Maybe things are going sideways for them to the point where they're desperate and they don't have a choice. But I cannot imagine a longtime Vegas bookmaker thinking it's a great idea to tax guys who are winning, meaning you win a nice ticket, you're paying on it. Man, you pay enough when you lose. You don't want to pay when you win, too. And the second part of that is that there will be no professional bettors betting with DraftKings, probably anywhere, let alone in these states. So 80% of the people said they would not continue their business with DraftKings. I would be one of those people. There's no chance in the world that I am going to continue to bet with them. If when I do win, which is hard to do, you get it taken away from you, part of it at least. It's just not right. And it should be against the law, honestly, but these states don't care. They're greedy, and they're kind of forcing the hands of the bookmakers in a way because the tax rate's so high. So imagine that. Pennsylvania, New York, two states that just tax their people to the fucking eyeballs, and it's a sad state of affairs. So, but I will say, you see, if you go on X and you look up, Crackman or any of the other guys that bet professionally out there, he's just a pretty noteworthy guy in the media, sports gambling media, so you get his opinions quite a bit. But they're not going to play DraftKings. Not that they play there all the time anyway, but they're not even going to consider it, because if they win, it's not worth it. And these guys run tight profit margins. Like, there is such a, if you don't think a couple cents matter on the dollar, whether you're laying 110 juice or 115 or 111, it matters to these guys. The guys who are doing this for a living, every single win means something to their overall bankroll, and it's not recreational money for them. So this is like life and death, not necessarily that extreme, but you get what I'm saying. Like, every dollar matters. Those guys will never tell you that a price doesn't matter, 5 cents doesn't matter. This, when you're doing this every day and you're locking in on large wagers, you need every single bit of value you can get out of them, and this is a way to just take more money from the people. So not a good job by DraftKings at all, and they will they'll pay dearly for this. This is going to be a really, really bad move for them. I would expect that they bail on this eventually, because the backlash is going to be so severe. AFC North, the only division in the NFL where all four teams are in the top 20 of tickets written and total handle. So that's amount and tickets written. So pretty interesting there. Obviously, the AFC North, quite an interesting division for everybody in the football, and locally and regionally in this part of the country, gets even more attention. So AFC North, the teams, everybody being backed in some capacity in the AFC North. Better at DK wagered $1,000 on Colorado to make the college football playoff. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. At 250-1, he could win $250,000. I think he probably deserves that if they make the playoff, but all I got to do is make it, and there is 12 teams now. So, maybe the Big 12 isn't that good, and maybe they get lucky, and I don't know. We'll see. I highly doubt it, but you never know. One of the teams that vacated the Big 12, Texas. This better at Bet Rivers, bet $27,217 on Texas to win the college football playoff. That's to win the whole thing. 9-1 would pay out $244,953. That, too, a good one, but a little bit more realistic than the Colorado one. Another better at DraftKings. Bet $100 on Kent State to win the CFB playoff at 10,000-1. Not make it, win. 10,000-1 would pay $1 million, and I would say that person absolutely, he probably deserves $10 million if that ticket would hit. Incredible bet there. Breece Hall getting heavy action for Offensive Player of the Year right now, down to 22-1. For the Jets running back. Will Brandon Ayuk be traded? That's the big talk around here. We'll get Sam's opinion of that. He's got his ear close to the ground up there in Pittsburgh, and he'll probably have a good bit of insight on that one. But to me, Steelers need to make this happen. But the problem is they don't really have a whole lot to give back to the 49ers. So it sounds like they want like Dan Moore Jr., which I don't know why anybody would want him, but and a couple other guys, even AJ Highsmith. I always call him AJ because AJ Highsmith played for Miami. Alex Highsmith for the 49ers might want Alex Highsmith. I don't understand that either. They brought in some pass rush. I know they lost a little bit, but this just doesn't seem like it might not get done, or one of these teams is going to have to compromise. Or I know this is impossible in the NFL probably, but maybe you have to get a third team involved. Maybe there's a team out there that's going to be a bust that's ready to move a receiver, and you can get it to go back to the 49ers somehow and give them some sort of compensation, a second-round pick or something like that goes to them instead of the 49ers, and then you get a third team involved. Not sure how easy that is to work out in the NFL. It's probably not. So, I don't know. If the Steelers get him, I think, like, I've been high on them all along, but I always thought they were going to get a receiver by now, and they haven't. I can't rely on Pickens, but I still think they'll win that division if Wilson holds up. I really do. I think the Ravens are going to be compromised. I think the Browns are just too inconsistent, and I think the Bengals just aren't good. So, we'll see. I don't know. Will Brandon Ayuk be a Steeler by next week? If he's not a Steeler by next week of the show, he won't be one. And then Iowa, over 8 wins, a huge, huge steam play for professional sports bettors. Handicappers all over the country are giving this out as one of their better plays. I'm not seeing it. I know they play a bad schedule, but it's a really bad offense. So Iowa over 8, people giving that out as a big play. So we'll see. Preseason notes, Hall of Fame game attracted more handle than any baseball game on that single night, of course. Preseason football is still king of the world. And then watch these line moves. These line moves are ridiculous. I mean, you're seeing 5-6 point swings, different teams being favored, flipping around, totals going down 3 and 4 points or up a few points. So they're all over the place. And if you can get the inside scoop on these and get out ahead of it, I would fire, because professionals, I say this on here every year, every season, whether it's the podcast, whether it's the radio, whether it's right here, these pro guys who can get the scoop quickest, they clean up on these games. They clean up on these preseason games. I know people laugh about it. What are you betting preseason for? You don't know anything. How are you going to pick the winners there? Well, last time I checked, it was hard to pick the winners in the regular season, too, because people don't do that very well. People, the average NFL bettor probably hits 3 out of 10 if he's lucky. So, yeah, I don't think you're doing real well in the regular season either. So I always thought that was a stupid argument. Guys like Rich Eisen and Trey Wingo, these guys, I mean, they slander the preseason. You can find incredible value here from a betting standpoint. So check these numbers. Watch them. Be ready to react. Be ready to jump on the things quickly. And if you have people you follow on X or Twitter that are beat writers for these teams, and you get inside scoop about who's going to be playing and who isn't before that goes on NFL Network or ESPN, figure it out, listen to them, make the bet, because the numbers will move. It happens all the time. I mean, there's 6 games probably that have flipped the favorites already just in a few days. So keep an eye on those numbers. You have to watch them. And then one little tidbit too, Brian Daboll, the New York Giants, 0-6 ATS in preseason games. So not a good few years for Daboll preseason, but not a good few years for regular season either, although he did make the playoffs 2 years ago. So we'll see. Malik Nabers seems like he's upping things there at the Giants, though, so maybe they're a little bit better. Maybe they're better than we all think. All right, we're going to take a break here. Bettors Last Stand, show number 95. Sponsored by the Brownie House, coming to you from the Pine Room Studios. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about some more football, the NFL, AFC, NFC. We're going to talk about the AFC and NFC East, and then we're going to talk about the Big 12. How will the Mountaineers be? I don't know. You may not like my opinion. We'll also do a little CFL and Aussie rules football. It's all football after the break here on Bettors Last Stand. We'll be right back.
Reminder! reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Better's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back. Show number 95, Better's Last Stand from the Pine Room Studios, downtown Wheeling, sponsored by our friends at the Brownie House. Get on over to yesbrownies.com today. And remember, 20% off your purchase when you use the promo code Pine Room. You're going to want to do that. It's well worth it, I promise. So yesbrownies.com, get on over there today. Thanks to everybody at the Brownie House for their wonderful partnership with us at the Pine Room. We'll also be on the Watchdog on Friday. That'll be the day you're listening to this, probably. And we'll be on 12 to 3, getting ready for our Football Friday shows coming up here in a couple of weeks. And we'll be talking a little bit about the Rough and Rowdy, Rough and Rowdy 25, Barstool Sports Rough and Rowdy 25 from the West Bank Arena on Friday night. Going to want to go down there and check out all that action. Should be a fun, fun evening. Starts at 8 o'clock, and all the big names will be in town for that. So we'll look forward to that one, and you can win some tickets if you're interested. Check us out on the radio, thewatchdognetwork.com, or flip it on your local radio dial here in the Wheeling, Ohio Valley area. We'll be on 12 to 3 on the Watchdog, our usual show spot. And you can get some tickets. You can text us on the line or give us a call on the Free Own Stack Watchdog hotline. All right, back to business we go here as we head towards the first part of the football season and its preseason. So before you get to the regular season, you got to do the preseason. And that's what we're going to do here right now. Find it interesting that people look forward to football season so much. It's just, it's really weird to me. I don't really, I guess when I was younger, when I actually liked it, in where teams were the same for the most part, and you maybe got a couple new guys a year in pros or in college. In college, very few. You got your freshmen that came in. You had some guys that were redshirted. You had maybe one transfer. And that was very rare, because there was not a lot of transfer, and he might have had a junior college guy. At least when I followed Miami Hurricanes and know every guy on the team, I know the entire roster four deep at every position, like the back of my hand. And now it's impossible. The turnover is so high, and it really takes away from it. You had a unity, you had a common bond there, especially when you went to games. From these teams, you watch the same guy play for 4 years. It was good. It was enjoyable. It's not enjoyable anymore. This has become horrible. I bitched about it all year last year. I bitched about it the year before that. It's just terrible. This portal thing's awful. The guidance these kids get now is terrible, and the product stinks. It's college football's not anywhere near what it was. 12 teams now in a playoff. I mean, they might as well let everybody in. I miss the days there was just two. I think that made it the season more important. Two teams, and that's it. I know it'll be good for betting. I know it'll be good for interest and all that kind of stuff to have 12 teams in here, but there's going to be some lopsided games. There's going to be teams that don't deserve to be in, and then you're still going to have people complaining or crying because they were the 13th and 14th team, and why, and the SEC is not fair. They'll get four teams in and nobody else will, and Ohio State will get in with three losses, and it's just – it's not really what I'm looking forward to, and I'm not looking forward to NFL at all, because that's been ruined by commercialism, penalties, and just a commissioner who has no idea what the hell he's doing, but he still wins, so it doesn't matter. People are so dumb and like the simplicity of football. I don't know what it is about football. Like, it's really not that fun of a game to watch. It's people smashing their heads against things, and I don't know if it just makes the regular common person feel like this is a game I could play, which I agree with. Of all the sports, the football is the least cerebral game. And I know football coaches will throw things and yell at me about that, but I've been around all these sports, and I'm going to promise you that the football is the least cerebral game of all the games. And I'm not talking about Tom Brady, and I'm not talking about these guys who make it to the top of the NFL. But when you're looking at low-level college and mid-level college and low-end pros, there's not a whole lot of difference between them and guys who never make it. So I don't know. I don't know what it is about it that makes people think that it's such a great game. But, hey, who am I to argue? You people all want it, so that's what we're going to give you. Let's talk NFL first, get into it right now. We'll talk the AFC East. Buffalo Bills, of course, a team that has some question marks coming into the season as they lost their top wide receiver, actually a couple of them. So they have concerns there, no doubt about it. The Jets are the team everybody's talking about. We know that right now. Buffalo's still the favorite to win the division, and their DraftKings win total is 10.5. The Jets at 9.5 games, Miami at 9.5, and New England way down at 4.5. I'd be a little concerned if I was a Jet fan. And I know that having Rodgers back will be an upgrade. There's no question about that. You had Zach Wilson last year. That's just an impossible situation to be able to win games with a guy like that. But you have a really bad coach and Robert Sala, who's just terrible. And I believe Nathaniel Hackett is going to be calling plays again, and he has not been very good in his time, I guess, away from Aaron Rodgers. So we'll see if he does a little bit better with him. But I don't think the Jets' defense is as good as everybody makes it out to be. If you go back and look at some of their scores from the last couple of years, it gets a lot of attention about how good they are. But they were a bend-but-don't-break kind of defense quite a bit. And I know they got Sauce Gardner and they got the other decent corner. And I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not telling you they're going to give up 30 points a game. But I don't think they're impossible to move the ball against. So I don't buy into that whole thing like, well, they have the 85 Bears defense and they just need a little bit of adequate quarterback play and they're going to be good. So they already have – Garrett Wilson's got issues with Rodgers already, so that's going to be interesting. Breece Hall, I still think Breece Hall is like a 50-year-old man. I don't know how he's held up the way that he did. But when he goes, when his body goes, it's going to go quick because he carried the ball so often in college. I don't know how he survived this long. And he did look good last year. He made me be – I was way wrong on him. I thought he would be slow and old by now, and he's not. But when he gets there, he's going to go fast. I think the Bills are still the team to beat in the division. I trust G. Haughty McDermott, the terrorist-loving Sean McDermott. I don't like him, but he is a pretty good coach. And, I almost want to retract that statement that he's a pretty good coach. He's an adequate coach. He's been pretty good. He's got Josh Allen at quarterback. I think that's going to be the best of anything that he can offer in that division. I think the Bills will be a little bit more committed to running the ball, using a little more two tight ends. They don't have the great receivers. So I think they're going to be very, very dependent on Josh Allen, which I like because he's good, and I like the way he moves the ball, and I like his aggressiveness and that he's not afraid to run. So I'm going to pick them to win the division. I'm also going to pick them to win over 9.5 games. Even 10.5 games I would go. I think they win at least 11. The Jets, I would lean to the under. I'm not officially giving out a play on them to the under, but 9.5, I think they win 7 or 8. I think they're a fringe playoff team. Same with Miami, right around 9 for them. Their total is at 9.5. Miami lost a lot. They didn't replace a lot. Tua got a contract. Tyreek Hill got a contract. Yeah, they're going to have a good offense. It's going to look really good against some of the lesser caliber teams in the league. So they're going to put up numbers, that's for sure. But can they really win games? Can they travel to cold weather? We saw what they did in the playoff game against Kansas City. It was not pretty. And that's the struggle they'll have when they come out of the humidity of Miami. They got a nice home field advantage down there, but man, when they come up north and they got to play Buffalo, the Jets, and New England in the wintertime, it's not going to be easy for them. So I think Miami, fringe playoff team too. I don't think they're going to be terrible, but I don't think they're going to be great. And then New England, I am a little bit higher on this team than most others. I think you're going to see a little bit of a different mindset and approach there from them, and I think that people are going to underestimate them quite a bit. 4.5 is their win total. I think they will win at least 5 games. So we're going to go with the Patriots over the 4.5. 5 is not difficult to get to. I think a game against the Jets and against the Dolphins are gettable. So I think that it sets up to be where I just think that New England can win a few of these games. Like they have they play at Cincinnati in the first game of the year. I see no reason why they couldn't win that game. I know people will disagree with that. They play at Tennessee. They play Chicago. 2 winnable games there. They play Arizona, which I'm high on Arizona, but they're going to be pretty on par with the Patriots. Indianapolis at home, I think they could absolutely win that game. Yeah, and then, you know, Jacksonville, you never know what you're going to get out of them, although I'm kind of high on Jacksonville this year. But I think you got at least five games on this schedule that they'll win, no doubt about it. I think they start off a little bit better than people think. And, again, they're going to get overlooked. They're going to say, oh, they don't have Belichick. They don't obviously have Brady anymore. They have no real identity of any kind. You can't even really tell you who their best player is on the roster. So I'm going to lean New England to the over. Actually, I'm not leaning. I'm giving that out as my strong play. The Bills over 9.5 and the Patriots over 4.5 in the AFC East. The Bills are my pick to win that division. And if I was going to pick how it will go out as far as exact order, I would say it will be Bills, Dolphins, Jets, and then New England. Still going to be last, but they'll still win 5 or 6 games. I think the Jets will have maybe 8 wins and the Dolphins will probably have 9. So competitive division, interesting division, a lot of question marks. Every one of these teams has serious question marks. You can't say that about a lot of the other divisions. There's always going to be one team you're going to say, well, they don't have that many question marks. Well, this division, everybody has question marks. Who's going to catch the ball for Buffalo? Can the Jets offense be that good just with Rodgers? Will their defense be as good as it has been? Which I'm still questionable about. Can they just take that big of a leap after a team that wasn't very good and their coach is bad? Miami, personnel issues, offense will be good, defense probably worse than last year. That wasn't good enough to win them enough games to be at home in the playoffs last year. They had to go to Kansas City. So how's that going to change? And then New England, they got question marks everywhere, including the coach Mayo, who I think will do a good job, but it's going to take a while to get some talent in there. And they have a lot of salary cap room. So I think you better get them now because they're going to keep being better, I would imagine, here in the next couple of years. All right, let's go over to the NFC East. This is a very popular division. I know avid Philly fans, avid Dallas fans, avid Giants fan, avid Redskins fan. I have people I know closely, family, that love all these teams. Somebody loves one of these teams. I mean, it's amazing where you can find so many fans. This division has just fans everywhere. So we'll see what happens. This is another division where I think you got some question marks. You got Philadelphia coming in, and they were, I would say, for their standards, because I set the bar pretty high with them, they're a good operation. Their GM does a great job. But last year wasn't a great year for them, and I think it kind of can show you that things are so just there's such a fine line for the NFL. Like, how good you'll be can be determined by such small things. And one of the small things that hurt Philly last year is that Jalen Hurts just wasn't as good as he had been. So am I blaming him for it all? No. He had a new coordinator. They had a new corner on defense, too. So that didn't help them at all. Philly comes in with a win total at DK at 10.5, along with Dallas at 10.5, the Giants at 6.5, the Redskins at 6.5. Can the Eagles bounce back? And I'm like, say that, like, they were 11-7 last year and they made the playoffs. I mean, they're still good, but I mean, by the end of last year's season, they're ready to run Sirianni out of town, which is just odd to me. They turned on him already. But that's the way the Eagle fans can be. So I'm a little bit worried about Jalen Hurts here. I like him as a guy. I think he's no harder working guy than him. He's a coach's kid. He busts his ass. He is modest, and he's driven, and I hope he does well. But I'm a little concerned about some of the things that I saw last year. They had some major problems on offense, if you remember. They were struggling by the end of the year. They could not get anything going. Sirianni almost lost his job for it. Do they have that fixed? The coordinators have been shaken up again there. Who's calling the plays? There's just a lot of questions here about Philadelphia. Do I think that they will be the best team in this division? Yes, I do. By default, I think they're just stable enough. They have good enough roster that they're going to be the best team. So I picked them to win the division. But I can't recommend a win total of over 10.5, a win total bet over 10.5. I just don't. I'm not certain. I think they'll win 10 games, but I can see them winning that division with 10 wins. So we're going to pass on that, but I will pick them to win the division. No play on Dallas. I would lean to the under here. They got holdouts. They got issues with contracts. They did not bring anything in. They've lost offensive linemen. Their defense is like a hocus-pocus defense. It either intercepts you or sacks you or gives up a touchdown. So man, I just don't. I don't love Dallas. I don't love anything about Dallas. I think they're a 8 or 9 win playoff team probably, but that's just because they're probably going to be better than a lot of the other teams in the NFC. But they got to get Prescott taken care of, which I don't think they should. But they got to get him into camp, and they got to get him ready to go, and they got to get CeeDee Lamb into camp, and you got to get him happy, because you got no chance if you don't have those guys. I'm not a Prescott guy. I don't think it's worth the pay him. I'd let him walk. I'd go back and rebuild. I just don't think there's you can see what C.J. Stroud, 1 year in the league, he takes you to the playoffs. That's what you're scrambling to pay millions upon millions to Dak Prescott to do the exact same thing. So you can find the guy out there. Just ask New England. Just ask Houston. It happens. It can happen. Giants, I lean under 6.5 with them. I don't think they're going to be as bad as everybody thinks they are, but they're not going to be very good either. So I'm slightly leaning to the under there. I think they'll probably be about a 6-win team. I just can't get to 7 with them. Neighbors, by all accounts, has been really good. So we'll see if that can make a big difference, but he still has Daniel Jones throwing to him. So I'm not as lukewarm on the Giants as some people, and I'm not as cold on the Giants as some people. Washington, small lean to the over here. I think Daniel's coming in and starting right away at quarterback's going to be good for them. He's going to be athletic. They're going to be able to do some things similar to what everybody raved about Anthony Richardson. This is what amazes me about people. Anthony Richardson is like the hot guy right now. He was hot last year. Everybody loved him. Rookie of the year, offensive rookie of the year. Geez, there's people even thinking he could be offensive player of the year. If you watched his tapes in college, or it's just his games, you don't have to watch tapes, but watch the games that he played at Florida, and you compare him to Daniels from LSU, it's like St. Michael's sixth grade against the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears in recent years, that might be a more even game, but we'll say that the Bears of the 80s with Mike Ditka. That's about how big of a difference that is. But I'd never hear anybody talking about it. It's like Daniels is like, oh, well, the Redskins, they stink, Dan Snyder, this, and like he doesn't even own the team anymore. It's all fresh for the Redskins. Now, I don't love their head coach at all. I think that's a huge mistake, and it will end up holding them back, but I think they will get better as time goes on, not because of Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn should be able to stabilize the defense. This is what he does. But the offense will have problems, but Daniels can bail them out of so many things. Like, if you think Anthony Richardson can be a good pro, or if you think Justin Fields can be a good pro, then Daniels absolutely should be, because he throws the ball better than those guys. So we'll see. It's a learning curve, no doubt about it, but I like Washington over 6.5. I think he, by default, if he doesn't get hurt, I think he'll lead them to 4 or 5 wins himself. And then you got to figure the defense will be improved with Dan Quinn, and they can win a couple more games. So we'll go with Philly to win the division. No play on Dallas. Lean under on the Giants, and a lean over on the Redskins of 6.5. That is the NFC East. Shifting over to college now. Big 12 action. Oh, boy. We talked about the ACC last week. We're diving in the Big 12 here. It's Utah and Kansas State. Seem to be a 2-horse race in that league to win it. I'm on Utah. I know I was anti-Utah all year last year, and it turned out I was right about them. They weren't very good. They missed their quarterback, Cam Rising, and now he'll be back. And I think he's been his 7th year of school, so he should be well versed in the offense by now. Whittingham's back as the coach. I think this is a major downgrade as far as conference goes from Utah coming in. The schedule they played last year in a really good Pac-12. Pac-12 was the best conference in football last year without a doubt. And now they're going to go over to the Big 12, who is not a tough league by nature. And their defenses have struggled in the past years. Utah is going to be able to win the line of scrimmage against all these teams. So I think Utah is an absolute slam dunk runaway winner in this conference. I really, really do. They got Southern Utah, Baylor, Utah State. Tough game in Oklahoma State. I'll give you that. They might even be a small dog in that game. Then they got Arizona, who won't be as good this year. Arizona State, TCU, Houston, BYU, Colorado, Iowa State, UCF. I mean, there can't be more than one loss on that schedule. And that might be at Oklahoma State. And that's still a question. every other game they're going to be a massive favorite in, I would think, even at, you know, UCF. So I think Utah to win 10 games for Utah, I think, is an absolute slam dunk. I like Utah over 9.5. That is my college football future best bet of the year. And I also think they'll make the playoff by default just because of that. So to make the college football playoff, I think, is a great bet for them. And you know what? Even if, say, Oklahoma State is better than I'm expecting, now I don't think they're going to be bad. They got a good coach. They got some good players coming back. Say Oklahoma State beats Utah in that game, and Oklahoma State goes undefeated or maybe loses one game, and Utah goes undefeated except for the loss to Oklahoma State. They each have one loss. Both of them will probably get in. So you got to like it. Even if they don't win the Big 12, they can still make the playoff. They can still cash that bet, and they're definitely going to go over the 9.5 wins. They're going to get 10 for sure. So Utah over 10.5 to win the Big 12 and to make the college football playoff. I love those bets, but the Utah over 9.5, I think, is the absolute best bet of the entire year, college football future-wise. So book that one right now. I highly, highly recommend that one. But I like Oklahoma State over as well. I like them over 8. I think their total's a little bit low. I thought that their schedule set up pretty good for them, too. They got South Dakota. They got a game at home against Arkansas. Should win that game. They're going to be a 10-point favorite at least. Then they're at Tulsa. Then they got the big showdown with Utah. That one could be tricky. So they have two spots here where I think they could lose, Utah and K-State. They go home against Utah at K-State the following week. That could be a little bit tricky. But WVU, BYU, Baylor, Arizona State, TCU, Texas Tech, Colorado, going to be favored in all of those games, and I just don't see them losing any more than the one or the two games, which would do the job, because it's going to get them to 9, and that's all we need to do. So Oklahoma State over 8, Utah over 9.5, and then I'm leaning under to the Mountaineers. I know people are high on them a little bit, but man, they got a lot of question marks, and you got some teams in here. You got Gundy, great coach, been with the program forever. You got Whittingham, great coach, been with the program forever. They have a lot of toys back on those teams. This is not going to be an easy year for the Mountaineers. Now, I know you don't have to play Texas, you don't have to play Oklahoma, that's okay, but those teams kind of have developed more of a softer identity in recent years, whereas Oklahoma State is a run the ball, more of a power offense than they used to be. And Utah is absolutely a power offense, using tight ends, and they throw the ball that way instead of just wide receivers and chucking it down the field. The Mountaineers have a really tough opener, Penn State. I think Penn State is going to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten this year. They're obviously going to be a playoff team this year. They would have been a playoff team in the last 3 or 4 years had there been a 12-team playoff. They just can't get over the Ohio State hump. But Penn State, Franklin, they don't win big games, but they're not going to have to win big games. They're going to be able to take care of the Mountaineers in the first game of the year. So I think it's going to spell some doom for the Mountaineers. They go at Pitt the third game. To me, coach said it last year that was Neil Brown's entire career if they could win that game last year. Well, he survived. Now, can they do it on the road? Pitt's not going to be as good. This is a game the Mountaineers should win. They might even be favored in the game, which is nuts on the road, but that worries me. And then they play Kansas. So I could see the Mountaineers starting off 1-4. They got Penn State, Albany, they'll win, Pitt, Kansas, and Oklahoma State. That's tricky. So I'm going under the 6.5 here with the Mountaineers. I think they'll win 6. I think they'll be bowl eligible. I think they'll be okay. They may even upset somebody, but they're going to lose a few games, a few tight ones. They're just not that talented. I think they'll win exactly 6 games if I had to pick. And then another lean, Colorado under 5.5. Deion Sanders, I mean, just the most polarizing guy there is. He's got North Dakota the first game. Don't count that one in. That's a very organized, small Division I team. They're very, very organized. Those guys will be laser-focused. Now, Colorado's talent at a few key positions might win out, probably will. But remember this when we get the spreads on these games and what North Dakota State will be, because they're going to be a team that could cover that and maybe even have a shot of winning. Then they go to Nebraska. Nebraska's going to be a little bit better. Colorado State, revenge game from last year. That's at Colorado State. Tricky. Baylor, they'll probably have a shot of winning that game at home. At UCF, going to be a dog there. At Kansas State, or I'm sorry, home against Kansas State, still going to be a dog. Then at Arizona, going to be a dog. Cincinnati at home. Cincinnati's a team that I'm high on. I'm going to talk about them in a minute. That's a tricky game. Then at Texas Tech, maybe that's a coin flip. They're pretty even. Utah, they're going to lose that game. They're going to go to Kansas, and they're going to lose, and they're going to play Oklahoma State at home, and they're going to lose that. So they're going to lose their last 3 games of the season for sure. So I can't I can't get past, I just can't get over 5.5. So I think Colorado wins 5, maybe just 4, but no more than 5, unless they have something that we're just not aware of yet, like that Deion got player X, Y, and Z that nobody really knew about that are better than we thought they would be, or there were young guys who have come along a lot faster. So because he's going to get some players that in there with the genetics and the talent and the pedigree to be able to be good at some point. Cincinnati, I'm high on them. 5.5 is the win total for them. And their home games, to me, make a big difference. This is a tough, tough place to play, Cincinnati. Been there for a Miami game a few years ago. And it's loud, and it's you're on top of the field, basically. And it's a tricky spot to go to for anybody. So they start out with 2 games at home. They'll be 2-0. They play Towson and Pitt. They go to Miami of Ohio. They'll be favored in that game. They should win. They get Houston at home, a very bad Houston team. They'll win that game. Then they go to Texas Tech, probably a game they can win on the road. At UCF will be tricky, I admit that. But they're back home for Arizona State. Arizona State's never come into something like that in the middle of the rural Midwest, and they're going to go to this little rinky-dink stadium on the campus, and you know that's going to be tricky for them. Then they go to Colorado, game they can win. They get West Virginia at home, a game they'll be favored in. Iowa State then on the road. That's probably going to be a loss, but you never know. And then at K-State, I concede, would be a loss finish up at home with TCU. So I'm thinking they can get to 7 wins at best-case scenario, but I think they at least get to 6. So I'm back in Cincinnati, and that's my second best play. Actually, that's probably my third best play. So my top play of the whole season in college football right here, Utah Utes, over 9.5 wins. I think it's an absolute lock, stock, and barrel bet. Get into the fucking ceiling. Get under your mattress. Get in out of your boot. Do whatever you got to do. Rob a bank. I don't care. Just get down on Utah over 9.5. I think it's a great, great bet. Also love them to make the playoff and to win the Big 12. Oklahoma State over 8. I love that bet as well. I think they'll be a very good team, probably win 10 games. And then Cincinnati over 5.5 is my third play in the Big 12. And then I have the two leans, West Virginia under 6.5 and Colorado under 5.5. So should be an exciting season of Big 12 action. It's a whole different looking conference now. I mean, it's strange to see the teams that you're – I mean, it was strange last year when you had, you know – BYU in there and UCF and Cincinnati and Houston. And then now you're coming in with Arizona and Arizona State. Like, it's very odd. So Kansas State, team I did not talk about. I think they're going to be adequate. I think they'll be okay. Everybody's picking them to win the league. I'm just not sold on it. I think they'll win 8 or 9, but didn't love anything when it comes to their schedule. I thought they do get Oklahoma State at home, but they got to go to the Mountaineers. They get Cincinnati at home, which is good, and they don't have to play Utah, so that's very helpful for them. So that could play in their favor quite a bit, but not sold on that roster. I just don't – I don't know. Avery Johnson is a highly hyped quarterback, but I don't know. They might be favored in every game, but there's just question marks there for me, and I'm just not going to recommend a play. I'm not saying play them under – but I'm not playing them over, so it'll be a pass on Kansas State. All right, that'll do it for the American football talk, but now we got other football to talk about. We got CFL football. We got Australian rules football as soon as I find the right paper here. Boy, I'm overloaded with papers. And, so CFL, AFL, starting with the CFL, we'll go through these. I have not been very good on these, so I'll be the first to admit to you. It's not been pretty, but we're going to try it. Thursday's game, I was going with Saskatchewan and over, but that won't matter. You won't hear this till after then. Friday, 7:30 kick, Toronto hosting Calgary. Both teams 4-4. Going to go with the Argos and the Stampeders under the 51, and I'm going to take Toronto. Could be a small home favorite. That's one of these ones that's flipping right on the teeter-totter pick. -1. Calgary was -1. Probably Toronto ends up being favored in the game, but play it on the money line just to be safe, whatever. Toronto and under the 51 in that one. Saturday, 7:30 kick. It'll be Hamilton at Montreal. Montreal 7.5. The total, 51. Montreal 7-1. They probably are the best team, but I'm still not really that impressed with them visually. Hamilton 2-6. Been a bad struggle for them. I think the Alouettes roll it up on the Ticats here, so we'll take Montreal -7.5 on Saturday. Sunday's game, 7:30 kick as well. It'll be BC at Edmonton. Edmonton, fresh off a big win. Of course, we didn't have him last week. We played against them, and they surprised us. BC lost their quarterback, Vernon Adams. He's probably out for this week for sure. He might be out for a couple of weeks. So that's a big problem. They're very, very, very dependent on him. So we're going to go under the 49 in the Elks and the Lions. And I would keep an eye on if Adams is out for sure in that game, which he probably will be, Edmonton's going to be favored, probably a small favorite, and I would lean to Edmonton minus a one or the two there. But, man, it's hard to back a team that's that bad. So those are the CFL plays. Flipping over to the AFL, where I mentioned we have three, count them as winners already, three AFL futures we marked down as a winner. The one loss that we have so far was the Adelaide Crows over 12.5. That's been a bad one. They're 7-12 on the season. We will not get there with that one, so that is an L. But we have Geelong, who is currently fifth in the table. We have them as a top four bet, so we're not in a bad spot there. They got a game they can win this week and a game they can win next week. Definitely well alive, but we already have them over their win total. We had them over 11.5 wins. They're already at 13. Then we had Port Adelaide over 13.5. They need to win this week to get us there, but they got plenty of time. We got still got 3 weeks left, so they got to win one game in 3 weeks to put that one in as a winner, and that's not even a winner yet. So we're also having them as a top four finish, and they're currently third right now, so another win there will probably get us home there. We had the Sydney Swans, who are the top of the table. We had them over 13.5. They're at 14 wins right now, although they have been slumping quite a bit. 14-6, been a great start for Sydney, so we have that one out. That was one of the winners that we cashed. West Coast, this one's going to be riding on this week. They take on the North Melbourne Kangaroos at North Melbourne. We had West Coast under 4.5 wins. They're at 4-16 right now. This one is for all the marbles right here. The Kangaroos are favored, which is very rare. They only have 3 wins on the season. They're favored at home. So let's hope for the Kangas to get the job done against West Coast and cash another one for us. And then Richmond, a cigar smoker here, and I think I even called it that on this show all those weeks ago. Richmond under 9.5, absolute cigar smoker. You could have lit the cigar on this one at about round 4. 2-18 are the Tigers on the season. We had them under 9.5, so that is already a winner. This week's action, let's get it started right now. Collingwood in Sydney, that's an early kick on Friday morning. It'll be Sydney minus 13.5. We'll take the Swans to get back on track. They've lost 4 of 5. Collingwood is in shambles, too. They're in desperation. They really need this game, but I don't know if they can get it turned around. GWS in Brisbane, this will be Friday night, 11:45 Eastern time. Brisbane, who's absolutely red hot right now. They've won 9 straight. They're 13-6-1. They take on GWS, who is 13-7, and GWS has been playing pretty well. They've won 5 in a row. The total on this one, 178.5. We're going to go over the 178.5, and I'm going to lean Brisbane here only because I think this line is fishy. It's 21. To me, that says take Brisbane. I really thought this line was going to be like a 2 scores, like 12 maybe, and it's 21. So something, there might be the word out on GWS that they're kind of punching above their weight, and this is going to be a big showdown, and Brisbane at home is really, really good. So we'll go with the Lions, minus the points and over the 178 on Friday night. West Coast at North Melbourne, this is the game we really need the Kangaroos. They're 3-17 against West Coast, who's 4-16. Kangas minus 8.5, total 175.5. I think this is a very tightly contested game. Both these teams will want this win, so we're going to go under 175.5. The Geelong Cats, 13-7. At the Fremantle Dockers, it'll be Fremantle minus 10.5 in this game. Geelong needs this game. They get themselves in a good spot. And I still think Geelong's dangerous here to win in the finals. If they get their roster back and they get one last go-around with Tom Hawkins, they could be dangerous at 12-1. So keep an eye on them on the futures board. 12-1 to win the grand final, I don't think it's a terrible bet. We'll go that's over 167.5. Geelong and Fremantle on Friday night, early Saturday morning. An early Saturday morning kick, it'll be Gold Coast at Essendon. Essendon minus 12.5, and the total 172.5. Essendon needs this really badly, but I don't trust them. Gold Coast, I can't trust either, but we're going to go under 172.5. I think that both these teams probably think they have a shot still at the finals, and Essendon definitely does. They're in ninth. Gold Coast would need to probably win out, so tightly contested game will go under 172.5. Port Adelaide, the team in third place right now on the ladder at the Melbourne Demons. Port 13-7. They've won 4 out of 5. Melbourne's had a really bad year. They're 10-10. They desperately need to win this game to have any shot. Port 9-1 to win it all. I still think that's a good bet. We gave that one out way back. They were also our pick to win the league, and that is still alive. If Sydney were to get beat here and Port wins out 2 of 3, I think Port can get the job done and cash that ticket that we gave out for them to win the regular season. So that would be a nice one, an unexpected one, because it looked like Sydney had ran away and hid. But we'll go with Port minus 14.5 against the Demons on Saturday mornings. Hawthorne and Carlton, this is a Saturday night game, 11 p.m. kickoff in the Eastern time zone. We're going to go with the Hawthorne Hawks, who, man, I hate betting this team. I had them last week. They didn't come through. Lost by 2 to GWS. This week, they're catching a half or maybe a point, depending on where you're at, against Carlton. Going to go over 172.5 and take the Hawks in that one. St. Kilda and Richmond, 1:20 a.m. late Saturday night or early Sunday. And we're going to go under 163.5 in this one. St. Kilda's 23.5-point favorite on the road. They'll probably win that game. Richmond's awful, as we know. We cash that ticket easily with the under, but St. Kilda's this is a game they could lose. They're that bad they could lose this game. We'll go under 163.5 just to be safe. And then at 2:10 a.m. Sunday morning kick, Western, the Bulldogs at the Adelaide Crows. Adelaide's been a disappointment all season long. Western needs this one to keep a good lock on their finals position. They're in seventh right now. They've got to be in the top eight. That'll be Western laying 15.5 on the road. Total 167.5, and we're going to go over the 167.5 there, the Crows and the Bulldogs. We picked the exact table beginning of the season. We gave you Port, Brisbane, Geelong, Collingwood, so we were wrong on that one, GWS, and Sydney. Now, Sydney's first, Brisbane's second, Port's third, GWS is fourth, and Geelong is fifth. So we had 5 of the 6 teams in that top 6. So I think that's pretty good. I think I'm pretty happy with that. Our futures are looking really good right now. Can finish off a couple of them this week and cash a couple more tickets for you. We're going to take a break here on Bettor's Last Stand, brought to you by the Brownie House. Get on over to yesbrownies.com today. Promo code PINEROOM for your 20% discount on your order. Also, join us on the Watchdog Network for our shows Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. We've got Football Fridays coming up here really, really soon. So we're going to talk lots of football and lots of other cool stuff on the Pine Room on the Watchdog every single Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. We're going to take a break now. We're going to be back with Sam the Man, talk some NASCAR. We're back with some NASCAR racing at Richmond. Also, I'm going to get his thoughts on the Pirates and everything else that's going on in the world, including the Brandon Ayuk saga, which rages on here on a Wednesday afternoon in the Pine Room Studios. We'll be back after the break.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Bettor's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in. It's Bettor's Last Stand, show number 95, Pine Room Studios, downtown Wheeling. Joined now by Sam the Man from Upper St. Clair. Getting done a nice long day of work. He comes home, he's getting ready for the Pirate game tonight. Meanwhile, while he has the radio on the way home, I'm sure he's hearing stuff about Brandon Ayuk. He's hearing things about how bad Ke'Bryan Hayes has been and some of the other deficiencies that the Pirates are exhibiting here lately. Derek Shelton, who's been a problem all season long. It's funny how when things are going well, everybody's touting how good of a job he's doing, but really he's not if you pay attention. Sam definitely pays attention. Sam, first let's start with the Buccos. We got racing to talk about, which is a positive, which we're going to get to later. But let's start with the Pirates right now. Little bit of a slide here. Not a good showing last night against the Padres. The warning track about sunk down into the earth, and among other problems. But is it too soon to start to panic here?
No, you panic right now. You panic right now because Matt, they are in it. They are 500, but they are in it. But Matt, they play the Padres. They play, this schedule is just horrific.
It's
horrific. And they could seriously lose these next 9 games. And I'm not kidding. It's not facetious. They could get on a run like that because these teams that they play are no joke.
Right.
Like the Padres did not mess around at the deadline at all.
Their pitching is great.
It did show last night. Their pitching is great. They're hitting, their lineup up and down is incredible. I'm going to have a tough time. I mean, they play the Padres, the Dodgers, the Padres, and then the Mariners, and then the Rangers.
All teams right now, for the exception of Texas, who's still a pretty good team, obviously. They won the World Series. All those teams, playoff teams right now. And
that's what I mean. Like, they could lose 9 straight games.
Now, the good news is they do own the Dodgers in recent years.
I know.
Strangely enough.
I know. That's how baseball and, like, sports work. You know, you play the best teams and you kick their ass, and you play the worst teams and you get your ass kicked.
But it is a really, really important stretch for them. I mean, they cannot I thought Sunday's game was like losing, like, 5 games in 1. Not only do you lose to a team you're challenging in the wild card, in Arizona, who's playing great baseball right now. You have them basically beat. You had your ace on the mound with Skeens. Everything going well, and then Holderman gives that up, and it's just disaster. And you could feel it coming. For people that watch them enough like we do, you could feel it coming. It just something just was concerning that whole inning. And it showed. And now it's like, everybody was on the high when they got these guys last week with the trade deadline. Yippee, yippee, pats on the back. Everything's perfect. But you said it best. I'm not certain that trading Martin Perez away just to save a few bucks was a good idea after you see what happened last night.
Yeah, it wasn't a good idea. I understand Jones is hurt. He'll come back. But I tell you what, I think the batters were catching on to him a little bit before he got hurt. He was giving up a lot more runs, a lot more home runs in particular. That's not good. And I mean, we're showing Paul Skeens in his first year. We're letting him know, hey, buddy, no lead is safe with you on the mound.
Right.
So it doesn't matter. I mean, it's so tough to say, but the bullpen, you can't fix it at this point. It is what it is. I couldn't believe Woodford pitched. I can't believe this guy's on the roster. I mean, it's so obvious. If you know baseball and you can look at numbers and have fucking eyeballs.
Yeah.
You know that he shouldn't be pitching when you're trying to get into the playoffs, because we're not going to just walk in. We sneak in at best.
Right.
If you're going to sneak in, that guy can't pitch.
No. And his first outing was a miracle showing.
Oh,
so you should have
so
just
lucky.
You should have cut your losses, got and just sent him back down and just been, okay, we surprised everybody. He was so bad they couldn't hit him, and now we got to get him out of here. Because that's not – you're right. When you have a guy coming in with a 10 ERA, I mean, short of having a complete, you know, just remanufacturing his entire wind-up delivery, arm slot, everything.
The White Sox released him.
Right. And then you see how good they've been. It's just typical Pirates, though. Cheap, jeez, cheap, and cheaper. And the only reason they got rid of Perez was because they needed to free up that money for the two guys that they were getting who aren't even high-end contract guys. It's the same old story. The cheapness wins out every year. It just destroys the fans. It destroys the team. And, you know, we're dumb enough to keep falling for it. So
I know. And you know what? I'm starting to think that Brian De La Cruz is the outfield version of Pedro Alvarez. It's either a dinger or a K. K is a bunch.
I will say, and having watched a decent amount of games when he was in for the Marlins, that's very, very common. It was a lot of strikeouts, but he did do decently with runners on base. But you got to get some guys on there for him too. That would help.
It would help.
I don't know. It's not. I'm not pressing the panic button yet, but I'll tell you what. If San Diego continues this up and they sweep them here at home and then they got to go out on the road, then it's starting to really worry me a lot. Freeman just came back for the Dodgers. And
I know. I mean, dude, these teams have rosters that are just sickening.
Yeah.
I mean, our rotation is great, but it doesn't matter. It's so obvious that it just doesn't matter. We need a 12-run lead to make sure that we might win. We might not win.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Obviously, baseball heating up now. You're starting to see who's real and who isn't, and the frauds are starting to surface now. The Mets and some of these teams that were kind of faking it through the first half, and even though they've got some acquisitions, they've not performed well. So, lots of time left, but it's borderline put up or shut up time for the Pirates here. By the time we talk next week, we'll know if they're even in it still. We'll have that settled, whether they're going to be in it for the long haul or they're going to have already fallen out, because you can't give these games away to these teams you're chasing.
I mean, here's the thing that's odd. There's only one other division, really, that has a race that's this close, and it's the American League East, and it's not even close. The Blue Jays are last with 52 wins.
Right.
The Reds are last with 55 wins, and the Brewers are first with 63. So that's as tight as, you know, these are going to give. So everybody is in it, but Gonzalez got to come back healthy immediately. Jones, strong immediately.
Yeah.
The bullpen's got to figure it out. Woodford's got a good Altoona.
They can't give away games. They can't, just can't. They can't give away. They gave that Astro game away, the last game of that series. I mean, they can't do it. They've
done it all year, so what makes me think it's going
to
change?
And Shelty and people just refuse to see that. The mistakes, the stupidness that he invokes every single night by pulling a guy too soon or leaving a guy in too long or bunt. Bob, what did you think about the bunting situation on Sunday? Like, the week before, he didn't bunt when he probably should have. I don't know. I don't think he knows. I think he's just guessing.
He doesn't know. And I honestly mean this from the bottom of my heart. If Clint Hurdle was the manager, 85 wins.
Now,
without a fucking doubt.
We talked about this on the radio exactly this yesterday. And Jubb, you know how disconnected he is. Now, he's back on board with the Pirates right now.
I heard that.
He said the same thing. He said, I think if this team had Clint Hurdle, that they would really be in a better spot. And there's no doubt about it. He's exactly right.
He's been in winning environments, World Series environments.
Correct.
You know, like, that's the guy. You know, he was always chewing gum, and maybe he got picked on a little bit, but he got us 98 wins.
Right.
We will not sniff that until I might be dead.
We all will be dead.
Yeah.
I mean, Greta's going to be in her 50s.
She might be dead. It might never happen that.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is like, it's easy to blame Clint Hurdle when the roster went down so badly. Like, come on. It was like, well, we can't pay him this much money to manage a terrible team, so let's just get rid of him or whatever. But honestly, they would have been better off bringing him back last year and bringing him back next year.
I know,
but we'll see. This week is going to determine a lot, so we'll talk about it next week. Let's switch over to the other team in the city, right? Actually, the Penguins are in the news too. Crosby still hasn't signed, so people are getting nervous about that one. Today's his birthday, and he still hasn't signed.
No, so I wouldn't sign if I was him.
No, me either. No,
dude, you gotta
Malkin's
go.
Leaving apparently next year, and maybe it's time for Sid to roll. And I wouldn't blame him. They just haven't done a very good job. Although he probably begged a little bit for them to keep the guys together. But we'll talk about that in the coming days, I'm sure. But the task at hand today, Brandon Ayuk, will he be a Steeler? It was yes. It was no. It was yes. It was no. Now it's maybe. But I just don't know how the Steelers are going to pull this off. I don't feel like they have what they need to be able to get him from San Francisco.
No, I agree. And if they do pull this off, it will be interesting to see what they get rid of, because it's going to be a high-end starter. It has to be.
Right, right.
And it's going to be picks. If they're day two picks, I draft picks are what they are. Sometimes you hit, you miss.
Sure.
That's the whole sports world. But if it's a high-end player, a Highsmith or
– Right.
If they were to say, give us Benton or somebody, like a young it would not – I don't think that is going to be worth it, because it's a – I know it's a passing league, but we don't even know. We're just assuming our wide receivers are bad already.
Right, it is – it's a tough one. It's a tough spot to be in. I mean, I think if they get Ayuk and they have most of the rest of the offense that they have intact, I think they're going to be pretty solid offensively. But they're going to have to give something up. Like a legitimately good starter, and they don't really have those on the offensive side of the ball. So they're going to have to give up a lineman of some kind or a pass rusher on defense, and Highsmith is being talked about. So who knows? I don't know what could happen
I
here.
I saw, Matt, I don't know if you saw that. Someone said maybe give him Roman Wilson. You know, I think that would be crazy.
You draft
somebody and you don't even play a snap for the team and you train them.
Yeah, that I probably wouldn't do. I'm assuming they'll send Austin just to fill the roster. But, man, I know they don't do three-team trades in the NFL. It might not even be allowed, but they might want to try to get a third team involved. Because I just don't – if I'm San Francisco, I'm just not certain what you're going to be able to give me that's going to sweeten that deal enough. I could franchise tag. I got him for this year. I could franchise him for two more years. So I know Ayuk doesn't want that, and he might just be a baby. But eventually, when the checks stop coming, man, the guy's going to have to show up. So
yeah,
I don't know.
And honestly, that would just suck if it just happened again. It's just Lev Bell 2.0. I want my money. Oh my God!
Well, Steelers aren't going to have a ton of salary cap at the after the year, so, and they have no quarterback on the books past this season. So
it's just absurd.
So I mean, they probably could do a decent deal with Ayuk, and if they have him and Pickens, I mean, that's a pretty formidable pair there. But I don't know. I they don't usually do things like this, so we'll see. They did trade a first rounder for Minkah Fitzpatrick. That year when they had Duck Hodges, and he's been pretty good. He wasn't great last year, but pretty solid. But man, this is very un-Steeler like to be this far along. You're starting preseason games this week, and your roster's really not where you want it to be yet.
Matt, it honestly, when I think about this stuff, this is a shout out to Big Ben. When you have a fucking quarterback, your problems are so minimal.
Sure. Yeah.
Like this is like. It just seems like ever since Ben left, dude, all we've had is problems.
Yeah. No, and that's like that a lot of places.
It's more evident as these seasons go on that Tomlin hit a lot of stuff. Our quarterback being great hides a lot of stuff.
No question.
Yeah. It's very interesting to see it come to light.
Yeah, so we'll see. Will the Pirates be in the pennant race next week? Will Brandon Ayuk be a Steeler? Two questions you can find out answered next week on episode 96 of Better's Last Stand. But the good news is, we got some racing back. One of the three circuits are back this week. We head to Richmond. Weather permitting, we have the Cookout 400 Sunday evening. I'm excited about this. I like Richmond anyway, and I've been in a little starvation mode for NASCAR.
I know.
Now, the Olympics have been a good little appetizer to nibble on here, but now I'm ready to get going here. So back at it. To Richmond we go, a track that is usually a track where guys – who have good statistics and results at this track perform well, and the guys who don't do not perform well. And I've heard several interviews with guys saying that exact thing. There's guys that flat out hate this track, and there's guys who flat out love it, and most notably Denny Hamlin. This guy's led like 5,000 laps here in his career. He's from the area. Obviously, this part of the country, Joe Gibbs Racing hotbed there with the everybody in this area is a Redskin fan, and so there's a lot of sediment there for Denny, and then his JGR teammate Martin Truex has probably been the next best driver at this track in recent years. He's got 3 wins, then he's got 5, then you got Brad Keselowski with a pair, you got Kyle Larson with a pair. Sam, the odds aren't great. As the guys I just mentioned, they're all in the 5-1 price range, along with Chris Bell. But man, it is going to be hard for somebody from Joe Gibbs Racing not to win this race.
I know, and you know what? The only name, honestly, that stood out to me when I was going through this was Denny Hamlin. Matt, this is his track.
Yes, he's just a master of it.
So it's just like if he wins, it will be no shocker, and he's. You know, Denny Hamlin, he's competitive, man. I've realized the last couple of years, he's one of my actually favorite drivers. I really like what he does for the sport. Yeah, yes. He might be a little prick, but you know what? You got to be.
It's good. It's good.
You got to be. So
Dale
I like
Earnhardt
that,
was like it.
Right, exactly. And you know what? People like the Intimidator, don't they?
Yes, they did.
But Matt, someone stood out to me more than Denny. It's Chris Buescher.
Oh, got him too. Got him starred. Absolutely.
Chris Buescher. And Ross Chastain stood out to me like 2 sore thumbs, but it's Buescher.
Okay, so Buescher's your guy.
Buescher is my guy. I want the 17 in victory lane.
Well, I like it because he is the defending champion of this particular race. Now, Denny won the race earlier this year, the Toyota Owners 400, but at the Cookout 400 last year, Chris Buescher led 88 laps. He was incredibly impressive. I also remember that his teammate, Brad Keselowski, was really, really strong in that race as well. He led over 100 laps. So is that something you see being a thing again this week? Brad, a really good number at 16-1 for an RFK team that has run really, really well at Richmond. Do you think there'll be 2 top 5 cars this week?
Yeah, I do. I actually have 3 names highlighted in green for my winner, possible people that could win. Okay. Keselowski, Buescher, and Chastain were my 3.
Nice. All right.
So I'm liking that we're on the same page there.
All right. So let me ask you about another couple of guys a little bit under the radar. Obviously, we talked about the favorites, and then the RFK guy is going to be really, really strong here in Keselowski and Buescher. So let's go to Joey Logano. He's 10-1. He's had some success here in the past. He's run well here. As recently as last year, he was a top five car here in the fall race. Last year, he finished second in the spring race this year. What are your thoughts on him, and can any other Fords contend other than the RFK guys?
I think they can. I don't know, but honestly, what you said earlier, I think it's a Joe. This is just a JGR race.
Yep.
I just have a hard time seeing these other cars getting up there just based on these numbers and what I keep looking at.
Right.
Some, like, I don't know. Do you look at McDowell's numbers?
Yeah.
I like his, you know, for the Fords.
Yeah, I thought he was interesting. I mean, in like 90-1. I mean,
right,
I'm not sure he could win, but I think he could be a top 10.
For sure.
I thought Ryan Preece was interesting as a long bomb. He's run well here in the past. He's like 200-1.
I know.
And then William Byron. I mean, I'm wondering where the Hendrick guys will be this week. I don't love Elliott's number, so I'm passing on him. I'm passing on Larson. He's just too short of a price. Thought Byron made a little bit of sense. Bowman's won here in the past.
I know.
So
his number's good.
I mean, you could see a slugfest in this race. If we'll know a little bit more once we qualify, a little practice, if JGR is going to be the team to beat, which we think they will be. But you know how the Hendricks are. If they get one of them locked in, usually the other ones are right behind. And then you got the RFK Fords and then maybe Logano. So a lot of factors here. A lot of guys that could come in under the radar. I think Preece at a giant number is good. And I think Josh Berry. Harvick was great at this track. The car setup's there. Berry ran well his last race here. So he could even be a dark horse top 10. Thought his number was a little bit too low, though, for a guy that's kind of unproven at 22-1. That's like Brad Keselowski territory, and Keselowski's a multiple champion. One other guy I got to ask you about who's run really well here, and I never really back him because he either gets overplayed and he just frustrates the fucking hell out of me, and that's Bubba Wallace. He's run really well here in the past. He could probably be a top 10 car, don't you think?
I do think it, and I have that. I'm looking at his name right here. I don't trust the guy at all, ever.
Either. He could do something foolish anytime.
He can give you three quarters of a great race. He'll be up there. He'll win some stages for you, get you some points. But, man, once it comes down to getting the checkered flag, something happens.
Yeah.
Either to him or he causes it.
Yeah, it's weird. The guy that owns his team, Michael Jordan, the coolest guy ever under pressure, and his secondary owner, Denny Hamlin, pretty much the second coolest guy under pressure. I mean, Denny Hamlin is just incredible when the stuff's on the line. But then you got Bubba, who just doesn't fit in. And I don't know. I mean, I want to say the guy's a contender here, but I can't back him. I just can't recommend people burning their money with him because it's so frustrating when he screws up. But it won't surprise me if he's up in contention. Another guy also in a Toyota, Tyler Reddick. What do you think of his chances? I didn't end up picking him. I didn't love his numbers, but I think he could be sneaky here.
Yeah, I think he could too, because I just think he's a damn good driver.
He is.
You know, I just think he doesn't get talked about enough.
Right. Right.
I'm not really sure why that is. Maybe because he's not a Hendrick driver. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well.
But I think he's a very good driver. He's super aggressive. And I don't know. There's a lot of – I think 23-11 is a team to look at coming out of the break. Because I don't know. The break is a good – it's a good reset because Hendrick was pretty dominant. I mean,
yes.
Hendrick, they didn't really fool around too much the first half.
No.
So it'll be interesting to see if this is a repeat because you can make some money on some Hendrick cars the second half.
Yeah, you can, and I think Rick Hendrick's probably preaching to his guys. Let's not get complacent now. I want to see more out of William Byron,
right,
who's not been his best the last few weeks. It's like he got us three wins, and then he's happy with that. He'll just wait to the playoffs. Yeah. Well, you know, William, you could mix in a win here and there. Just keep sharp because you know Larson's going to keep trying
keep
to win.
Sharp. Yeah.
But, yeah, these Toyotas are going to be dangerous. I think the 23-11 guys will be good, and obviously the JGR cars are going to be right there. I'm looking forward to it. Should be a good one. So, ultimately, are you going with Denny as your top pick?
Yeah, I think Denny's going to win it. But my heart wants Chris Buescher.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Hey, what did you think about Gilliland maybe sneaking in the top 10? I think it's totally possible.
I like this guy. I really do. I'm becoming a fan. I'm following this guy more and more. I've been trying to find – not every sports book will have matchups with him, but I've been trying to find matchups each week because – they still have him kind of on the tier with some of these guys that he's just better than. And I love looking for the value with Todd Gilliland. I like him. I definitely think he's a guy. I also think Ty Gibbs could be very, very strong here. Obviously going to have the car set up and tons of knowledge with all how much success the Toyotas have had here. He could be a dark horse. And you know what? It wouldn't shock me if he somehow won this race.
No, I wouldn't either. I mean, that's his life. He's grew up in it. He's so young. He's got the experience. It's in his blood, man. Wouldn't shock me either.
And it's coming soon. The win will come. It's just a matter of time. I think it'll probably be this year. One guy I'll be fading is Ricky Stenhouse. I know he's remarked multiple times about how he hates Richmond. So,
yeah, see you, Ricky.
Sorry, Ricky. Well, best of luck in the weeks to come. But it's not going to be a track we'll be using him. All right. Anything else sticking out? Racing-wise, obviously, we're without F1 for a couple more weeks. We got the IndyCars coming back next week, so that's good. But we talked in the previous weeks just about how excited we are that F1 is good again. So what are some things that maybe you're on the radar when we get back to the Dutch Grand Prix? Do we expect Mercedes and McLaren to continue up at the top?
I hope Lewis is right up in the top three. I think he's going to have to make some serious decision after this season of like, what have I done?
Right. No,
like, what have I done? Because Ferrari, they are not looking too hot. They better use this break to figure something out, because Mercedes and McLaren are, you know, they're cooking, and Red Bull is cooking with one person.
Yeah.
You know, Verstappen's good. Sergio, he's not right now.
No, he's not.
So it's odd to me that we're at the point now where Red Bull and Ferrari are down and McLaren and Mercedes are up.
Yep. No, it is good to see. Makes it exciting. If I'm Red Bull, I'm telling Sergio Perez, hey, Checo, why don't you head out to the Canary Islands? We'll see you back at a Dutch Grand Prix weekend. Like, there's nothing that can be done that's going to salvage him right now. He's gone. I don't know what else you can say. There's such a drop off now. His car is good. Like, it can't be that bad. So it's just baffling.
You know what else is? You know what? That is the greatest word you could have used. You know what else is baffling to me, Matt? IndyCar has 5 races left in the season.
Yeah, that's
5. And NASCAR has 14.
I know.
What the fuck?
Yeah, IndyCar.
What's that?
IndyCar.
What is that?
You know what? IndyCar would be better off just being an Olympic sport and doing all the races in 2 weeks and just being done with it. That's about what it is. Other than the Indy 500, it wouldn't even matter, because I don't understand their schedule. I don't understand. We still can't figure out Iowa, although we did have 2 winners that weekend, so I can't complain.
Jesus.
But, yeah, I don't know what the hell they do. I mean, it is perplexing. Gateway next week. We'll talk about it then, but it is weird. 5 races left.
I mean, there's 14 in NASCAR.
Yeah. Still lots of good weather. I don't know if they've checked recently, but usually the good weather goes into October. So
typically it does. Yeah. Typically.
Yeah. Oh boy, what are we going to?
Penske's
do
old, so maybe he just gets tired.
Yeah, he didn't like it when they moved the clocks up. So
right,
gets dark too early for old Roger.
Yeah, hurts his bones.
All right. Well, anything else on the radar? Olympics got a few more days left. Anything you've been keeping an eye on there?
USA basketball. Just keep your eyes on them. I don't trust them.
Hey, France with a nice win over Canada yesterday. They might be dangerous.
You know, when I see reports that Rudy Gobert hurt his finger, I just get pissed, man, because I can't leave work when I hurt my finger.
Yeah, right. None of us can. Rudy Gobert, what a yeah. Guy causes the COVID outbreak, everything.
Yeah,
he
fucking idiot.
Could blame him for all the problems of the world right now. Oh, Rudy. All right, Sam. Well, thanks as always. Best of luck to the Pirates. We're going to need it. Say your prayers.
Yes,
it's going to come to that at this point. And we'll see what happens with Brandon Ayuk and Sidney Crosby next week. But it is good to have racing back. And I'm looking forward to the Richmond weekend and the final week of the Olympics as preseason football will be heating up. So we'll have something to laugh about there. So hard to believe. It's already August and we're heading towards the pigskin.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's go Steelers. It's go Bucks. There's a knife in my heart, Matt, from the Pirates. There always is. But, you know, I'm happy the Steelers are starting.
Yeah.
More drama and bullshit to listen to on the radio.
That knife gets twisted in a little further each year, every year that Nutting owns the team. So let's hope you don't bleed out before they win. That's the key.
I'm close.
Stay with us. All right, Sam. Thanks for everything. We'll talk to you next week, buddy.
Yep, later, Matt.
All right, see ya. All right, that's Sam the Man, Upper St. Clair, giving us a great insight, racing, Pirates, Steelers, all the good stuff. That's going to do it for us here, Show 95, Bettors Last Stand. Follow us on Twitter or X, BLS_PRP. And check out thepineroomstudios.com, our website. Getting more stuff on it by the day. Blog's going up. Chris just put a blog up yesterday, or maybe it was today. What is today? Wednesday? Yeah, today I put it up. So Chris had a blog up today. You can find out what's going on and what's going on in the minds of all the Pine Room guys, pineroomstudios.com. Visit that today at the Pine Room Studios on social media. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and what else? All Facebook, of course, and at the YouTube page as well, the Pine Room Studios. So check out our stuff. Check us out on the Watchdog. We're going to have a huge year of high school football on the Watchdog. We're going to be doing a lot of that stuff here, so we'll have a full schedule of that posted on the website as well as the watchdognetwork.com. So give us a listen this week. We're on Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. Have a great weekend. Best of luck with your wagers. Enjoy the last few days of the Olympics. Enjoy the Pirates for while you can. And enjoy the preseason football. We'll see if we can get some winners. We'll see you next week on Better's Last Stand. Have a great weekend.